You are now listening to Next on Scene with your host, Jackie Zuck. Showcasing tomorrow's scene today, for Startups to Celebrities, we are your source to find out what's next. Stay up to date at nextonscene.com or follow us on social media at Next on Scene on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And are you next? We want to hear from you. Stay tuned for who's next on scene. Welcome back to Next on Scene, everybody. It's your host, Jackie Zuck. Happy Tuesday. What an exciting week of podcasts of amazing, inspirational people from all over the world, from Australia to Boston. We're also interviewing somebody this week from Atlanta. Really, really cool stuff happening for Next on Scene, and our podcast is continuing to soar because of you. So thank you so much. We also have our fashion show coming up April 11th. If you have not gotten your tickets yet, we already have sold over 100 tickets, so we hope to see you there. It's going to be awesome. And our Next on Scene magazines for spring summer come out that night as well. So a lot of exciting things are on the horizon. Tickets are still available on Eventbrite, so we hope to see you there. So really, really exciting stuff happening for all of us in Next on Scene. So who is next to know about today? Roseanne Sedoya Materia. We are officially coming up on the 6-year anniversary for the Boston Marathon bombing, and it is truly an honor to interview one of the amazing survivors that has an incredible story to tell. She also now is an author of a book called Perfect Strangers, discussing the positive journey of what came out of the marathon and the people that she connected with that are now, you know, very significant in her life. One has become her husband, which is super touching. So we're truly, truly honored to interview Roseanne today. So stay tuned for the amazing and inspiring Roseanne Sedoya Materia. What really came out of this podcast the most, which we are excited to give you a tidbit, is no matter what life throws at you, no matter what circumstances are out of your control, you can come out of it in a positive light. And that is very important. And she has so much inspiration and insightful stuff to share. So stay tuned for Roseanne. All right, everybody. I officially have the amazing author, speaker, and survivor, Roseanne Sedoya Materia. Hi, Roseanne. How are you today?
Hi, Jackie. Good, thank you.
So honored to have you on. What an amazing story and inspiration you are. Seriously, it is such an honor to have you on today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Of course. So, of course, now we know the Boston Marathon bombing anniversary is already coming up. 6 years. Can't believe it. Right. Your journey is such an inspiration, and it's so inspiring to see how many places you've spoke at and sharing your story. And now you're also an author, which is even more exciting, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. So let's first talk about the day itself, April 15, 2013. Tell us about the day, what you were doing the morning of and leading up to the marathon bombing.
You know, attending the marathon was something that I've done for so many years. It started out, you know, being as a little kid with my dad and my sister, we would go in and we'd go to the Red Sox game first. And then we would make our way to Kenmore Square to see the runners start coming into Boston. And we used to have a neighbor where we grew up in Dracut, Massachusetts, and she would always run the marathon. As a matter of fact, she still runs it pretty much to this day. So she's been running for a very long time. Some years we would catch her, some years we wouldn't, because obviously back then we didn't have the great technology to track
where people were. Yeah.
Imagine that. Some kids don't ever know what that was like to, you know, hope to wait and see their friend coming. But
right.
So it started kind of in that tradition, and then it kind of transferred over to going with friends over the years. And it just became my favorite day in the city because of the energy that is in the city pretty much for that whole week leading up to the marathon. People come from all over the world. It's probably one of the most historic marathons and the most cherished, I think, where people are always trying to qualify to get in. And it's an amazing time of year. It's season, the seasons are changing. Spring is in the air after being cooped up for the winter, and everybody's excited. Everybody's jovial and great moods and happy, and it's definitely a day to be out and about. And that's where I was on the morning of April 15, 2013. I was out and about. Day started the same as it normally had. Went to the Red Sox game with my friend Sabrina, And then about the seventh inning, we had got notified our friend Jen was going to be coming down Boylston Street in a bit. So we knew we would have to take the time to walk over to our normal meeting spot. And so at the seventh inning, we decided to take a walk over to Forum Restaurant where we were supposed to be to cheer our friends on.
Wow. So, you know, like intuitively, because I know I asked this in like questions that I send prior, but like, did you feel anything different at all? Because I know like when certain circumstances do come up, especially as women, I feel like we're very intuitive. So did you feel anything was off that you didn't understand that day? Or was it just like a normal, like, you know, normal day for Roseanne?
You know, Jackie, I really, when I read through the questions, I saw that and I thought, wow, she's the first person to say something like that. And of course it brought me back to think about it. And I don't know, I being 6 years out, it's hard to reflect that far back.
Totally.
I've always felt that I've been, I always felt like I've had a touch of being intuitive for different reasons or different things that have happened in my life. I can't point it out specifically, but in thinking about it, the one thing that I think about was a comment my sister made after the fact. And basically, from them having to go in and out of my apartment while I wasn't there, she said, you know, good thing you're a neat person. So, I mean, everything was put away. My bed was made. You know, there weren't any dishes in the sink. So, I don't know. Maybe I just kind of prepped myself for the extended non-return to my apartment.
Well, isn't that crazy? It's like the little things, though. That's what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, when I think back to that, it makes me think of that. So, you know, whether or not I felt any different that day, I don't think so. I think I was just as excited and looking forward to the day as I usually had.
For sure. No, I was just so curious because I know, like, for me especially, like, when I had gone through some trauma or things that have happened to me in the past, like, there was definitely, like, some type of intuitive feeling that I had and I didn't understand it. So that's why I was so curious with somebody who did go through trauma, like what that was like for you, you know? But I was just fascinated. So thank you for being open to share about that. So what a gift, by the way, that you wrote a book about your whole experience called Perfect Strangers. So tell us the inspiration behind the book and then walk us through the experience. I don't expect the full book right now, just a little tidbit, of course, but walk us through the day.
So to start with the book Perfect Strangers, you know, we basically wrote it so that people would know the good that came out of that day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was such a crazy event. And, you know, if you take each one of us that the book is about, the book is really myself and three of my first responders. Each one is a different person and comes from a different background. So the book leads up to how the four of us meet. It's really not so much about the bombing, but it's more so about the bonds that were made after that. But, you know, and it goes through the series of where we were and what was going on. And my friend Jen is mentioned in the book, and she was the one that was running. She had been approaching. She wasn't very far from us. We never saw her, but she definitely felt the explosion. She was that close to where we were. And, you know, looking back at that time, I was standing along the railing where the spectators and, you know, watch the runners coming down Boylston Street. And I remember these three college girls were next to me. They went to Tufts University, and everybody who had a Tufts bib on was like, that was running down Boylston. They were cheering for, whether they knew them or didn't know them. They just were yelling loudly. I remember one girl, she had long hair and she kept flipping it in my face. And I was kind of getting annoyed, but, you know, and the scene is that it's so noisy. People are with cowbells and yelling and screaming and cheering. And there's all kinds of noise that's happening at that point. And I positioned myself where I had a good vantage point to see down Boylston Street, which that vantage point had separated me from my friends. They were on one side of a mailbox, and I happened to move myself to the opposite side where I could kind of squeeze in and then lean up against the metal gate that had separated us from the runners. And just could see down Boylston Street pretty well. I think that the timing of when the first bomb went off, and me turning to my left to look down towards it and where Jen was approaching, had I been watching the street, I probably would have caught a glimpse of her. But basically, when that first bomb went off, the crowd went completely silent. Like, you could hear a pin drop. It was amazing how quiet and calm it was for a moment. And then sort of hysteria set in. And if I had thought about looking back up the street to watch the runners, I probably would have seen her. But within 10 to 12 seconds, which is fast but slow in your mind, I guess.
Totally,
that's where
right.
To put it. The second explosion happened and never saw her.
Crazy. It's unbelievable. You really hit like the nail on the head by saying like 12 seconds really can be slow. Like in a certain moment, like it could not be more true.
Yeah. I mean, for all of the different thoughts that were kind of pouring through my head, you know, you would have thought maybe 20 minutes went by because I was rationalizing, okay, what could that be? I've been here before. They've never had celebratory cannons in the past for the runners, especially the elite runners that come in hours ago. Why would they have celebratory cannons for the regular runners coming in? And, you know, someone yelled, the building fell down, and someone said it was a manhole cover. And then someone said, jump, you know, get in the middle of the street. And then I did the assessment of, you know, what would happen if we all tried to go over that metal gate. You know, it would topple. I'd probably get crushed because I was up front.
Right.
And, you know, maybe I would skin a palm or, you know, my knee or break a wrist or something. And that would be a bad day on Marathon Monday, right?
Me, right.
Like ripping my jeans or something. And, you know, so all those thoughts went through my brain in like 10 to 12 seconds. And it was just crazy to think that. People started kind of moving upstream, up towards us. And I think as they started moving up, the people that they were coming upon, kind of like a wave, started to get a little hysterical and, you know, started running. And that flowed right to where I was. And I think at that point, with all of the conversation that was going on around me about, you know, the building, the manhole, get in the street, I decided that I was going to run because I figured I couldn't get over that barricade, or if I did, I'd probably get injured. And I basically ran into the backpack. Within me taking like not even two steps, I saw the two flashes of white light at my feet, and then everything kind of went blank. It went, you know, pitch black for a second or two.
Wow. And then obviously, you know, in your book, you talk about like how your three, you know, angels came to your savior. So like, let's talk about the first one. So that happens. So you essentially run into the backpack and then your first angel walks toward you. Tell our audience who that is and
I'd like to preface it by saying there are so many people that helped me that day.
For sure.
And there are so many people that helped others that day that I don't want to leave them necessarily out of it. But there are three people that I completely bonded with for whatever reason from that moment. And the first one you're mentioning is this college student at the time, Shore Salter, who was 19 and luckily for me had some liquid courage and was able to think about what he needed to do. And he was on the opposite side of the street, heard the first explosion happen, and then decided to run in and help. And as I was sitting on the sidewalk bleeding, he basically told me I had to get out of there. And I couldn't, you know, not that I didn't have a leg, because I did, but it was severely injured.
For sure.
But my brain was, I think my brain already knew that there was no saving it. And he scooped me up off the sidewalk and carried me to the middle of Boylston Street to the point of where, like, I told him I, like, needed to be put down because I was starting to get, like, nauseous. And
of course, right.
Yeah, so he really came out of nowhere and definitely was like an angel because he came through this, like, cloud of smoke that was still settling from the explosion. And as other people were running past me, which I thought they were running away from me, little did I know that they were running to others behind me. You know, he just kind of came over, scooped me up and carried me away, so to say.
Right. And then of course that led you to the Boston police officer, right? They were all like,
yes,
in a chain of events, essentially.
Yes. So, as Shores was laying me down, there were these two gentlemen that came over. One gave Shores a belt, one helped him apply it as a tourniquet. But then, you know, the police officers in the area kind of brushed anybody away who wasn't medical or a first responder. So they left poor Shores holding the tourniquet by himself as I'm laying there in the middle of the street. And then Officer Shana Catone comes and finds him there holding the tourniquet and basically kind of crouches down, kneels down next to me and puts her face in my face and starts asking me a list of questions of who I am and what was I doing there and, you know, who can I call to contact? And it was just like a crazy set of events that had happened to lead her there to Shores and me. And basically, she really kept me calm, kept me conscious. I had it in my mind that if I didn't stay conscious, I would die.
Right. So, of course. Well, why wouldn't anybody think that in that position you were in at that time, you know?
Yeah. I figured I had two choices. One was to become hysterical and pass out, or to remain as calm as I could and breathe through it and stay conscious, which is what, luckily, I chose the second option. But I would also kind of internalize. I kept my eyes closed because I didn't want to see anything else around me. I hadn't seen a lot, and I knew it was going to be bad if I had seen other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I consciously chose to keep my eyes closed. And as I was laying on the street, she kept checking in with me to make sure that I was still conscious and still with her. And I was. I was listening to everything as much as I could with two blown eardrums. But you could hear the chitter-chatter going on around me. And you know, so she kept me calm. And then she also managed to get my sister's telephone number so that we could contact my family to let them know I had been injured.
Of course. Wow. And then, of course, now that leads you to the firefighter. So once, you know, you were done with Shana, what happened and how did you get in touch with your next angel?
So once Shana had gotten there, the firehouse that's at the top of Boylston Street, it's the Boylston Street Firehouse, their trucks had started to come down the street, and a bunch of the firefighters had kind of jumped off and gone to help different people. So a few of them came to me as they found me in the middle of the street, and they started to prepare me to be loaded into some form of transport, whether it be an ambulance or something. And they got me onto a backboard. They had to straighten out my right leg, which was the most excruciating pain ever. I think you probably could have heard me yell and scream in China that day if you were listening, you know, close enough. But as they were all kind of helping me and different options of transport were coming and going, because I could hear sirens, I could hear ambulances coming and going. And every time I thought I could hear them coming, I'd be like, yes, morphine. And then they'd go and I'd be like, oh no. And so, as they're trying to figure out how to get me to the hospital, Mike Materia, firefighter Mike Materia, had been trying to help out a few others who sadly, ended up passing. But he came over to me next. And as he came over there, they were getting ready to load me into the back of a form of transportation to the hospital. And basically he grabbed my head, and whoever usually grabs the head jumps into the vehicle to load them. And, you know, it wasn't your typical ambulance. So he chose to come along with me to the hospital and hold the backboard on the back bench and, you know, really keep me stable until we got to the hospital.
And he's like, now your husband.
Yes.
I love it. I freaking love it. That is so beautiful. It's like, you know, it's so sad what you went through, but like it ended up becoming like a beautiful love story on some level, you know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm very fortunate that he came into my life. I hate, you know, it's tough the way it happened, but
of course.
We probably would never have been together if it hadn't been that circumstance.
So funny how life sets up things that way, isn't it?
Yes, it truly is.
So, wow, what an incredible, incredible story. Okay, so I'm really inspired too. Like, one, you had a ton of courage to even keep it together as much as you could that day. So major props to you.
Thank you.
Even one step further, though, the whole recovery process, can you walk us through, like, what that was like? So, you get to the hospital. Now you have to, like, you know, learn that you have to get your leg replaced, right? Now you have a metal leg.
Correct. I have a prosthetic, yes.
Right. So what goes into that training? Like, can you break it down a little bit for us?
Sure. I can give you a glimpse because it's very...
It takes time.
It takes so much time. Yeah. You know, one thing that people had kind of forewarned us early on about which I greatly appreciate, but you still hear it, but you don't grasp it, is that even though you get your prosthesis, it's still a long road. I mean, I still work on it today. If I don't exercise a lot, then I lose the muscle to move that prosthesis. There's a difference between being a below knee amputee and what I am is above knee amputee. And not to say that I wish for my leg back, which, you know, may or may not be the case, but if anything, I wish I really had a knee because I think that it would make it a little bit easier to manipulate. But, you know, I don't do bad with what I have, but it takes time. It takes practice. It takes a lot of energy.
For sure.
And, you know, paying attention to your physical therapist and your occupational therapist and know when, you know, to call it quits on certain things that you're trying to do or don't do or can't do or want to do but not sure you can do. And the biggest part about it is all is to learn when to laugh and laugh at yourself. And, you know, I do it quite often when I take a tumble or something because I definitely fall more frequently than I did when I was a two-legger.
I mean, you don't have to justify. The fact that you're doing really great with it alone is amazing. So, you know, embrace that.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I got a compliment yesterday from a nurse that I happened to bump into. And, you know, she asked what happened to my leg. I told her. And she's like, wow, you look like you're doing really well. And I'm like, well, practice makes perfect because that's really what it is.
It's true.
You know, and I definitely proved the scientific saying that you have to learn how to walk before you can run. So really keeping those muscles in line, in shape, you know, and active really are the muscles that help me move forward in doing different activities, especially running has been kind of tabled for a while. It was so hard in the beginning. It's not something like you get your running blade and just because you have a prosthesis, you get on your running blade and go. It's taken a lot of time and energy, and I've kind of backed off a little bit from it, but I do feel as though that with walking that I've built up those muscles, and I'm hoping this spring I will try running again.
Why not? That's so empowering, Roseanne. I'm so happy for you. Rock it.
Thank you. We look at the running leg every so often. I have it positioned in a spot that I have to see it every day. So,
well, it's a sign then, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's definitely not out of sight, and it's definitely not out of mind.
Right. For sure. For sure. Amazing. Oh my God. You're so inspiring. Seriously. I'm loving this whole conversation. So I have a general question for you. You know, after everything that happened, when was your first time that you were able to start talking about everything that happened?
So I think because I really didn't grasp the situation as a whole in the beginning. I don't know if it was because of the medication I was on or just the fact that I hadn't, you know, early on when you're in ICU, you don't meet other people other than your family and your friends that come in to see you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not socializing from room to room to room by any means for that situation. So for the first full week, I really had no idea the extent of what had happened.
Right.
I didn't, you know, Shana Catone, the Boston police officer, came in on Thursday and told me that they were, you know, out looking and they were going to get those M mothers or whatever you want to say.
Right.
You know, and I'm like thinking to myself, what the heck is she talking about?
Right.
You know, so I really didn't know. But then as I transferred over to Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital, I would see an amputee here in the hallway or an amputee there in therapy. And, you know, one was definitely involved, but one that I saw wasn't. She happened to just make a choice to amputate her leg because of health reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was kind of hard to figure out who was involved and who wasn't. And that was at the old Spalding, which I was at for 4 days. And then I had to be transported to the brand new Spalding because they opened up a whole new amazing facility just 4 days after the bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that location, I really became more aware of the multitude of people that had really been affected and had become amputees out of the situation. So kind of in between the first week and the second week is probably when I was getting a gist of the enormity of what had happened. But I spoke about it right from the beginning, and I think that's what's helped me tremendously.
Like heal mentally. Totally, right.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
I think, too, because it's almost like it happened to another person. Like, I feel like it didn't happen totally to me.
Right, right. Isn't that interesting? I'm so spiritual, yeah. So I just totally understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I wake up with every day, and every day I wake up and I look down at my leg before I put my prosthesis on, and I think to myself, God, I don't have a leg. You know, it's so weird.
Right.
I went for a long time with two legs, and now it's just bizarre that I don't have it. It's weird. And I don't know if I'll ever get used to it.
Right. And I don't think that you have to. It's just, you know, it's part of your journey.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's amazing that like you're so open to sharing it, and like you can come out, like you can come out strong and share it and be open about like change is the essence of life, you know, like on any level.
Yeah, so. It is. It truly is. And, you know, it's about choices. It's about change. And don't get me wrong, Jackie, because, you know, every day isn't roses and, you know, sunshine. And, you know, there are days that I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
There are times that I won't go into a store because I feel awkward about it. You know, I don't want to say like I'm ashamed of it or embarrassed or whatever, but I guess that's maybe the best way to explain it is that I just, you know, I'm different.
Right.
And sometimes in some days it's hard to be different and, you know, to watch people talk about you or whisper about you or watch you as you walk by. And sometimes I don't mind it. And I would say the majority of the time I don't mind it.
Right.
But there are those moments that I'm feeling insecure about it. And I just don't like the insecurity. So I just choose not to do what I might have normally done.
Right. And I don't think you need to justify that. I think even people that are, you know, more quote unquote have two legs feel the same way about other things, whether it's their weight or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? It could be anybody.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So I think that just, you know, it's just, it's all part of the journey. And I think that you got to embrace your individualism, like who you are. And that's what makes you, you.
Yes. Yes. I agree. And I try to do that on most days.
Totally. But, and I think you absolutely are. I think you're doing a great job. I mean, even public speaking in these incredible settings in front of lots of people. I mean, that takes a lot of courage too, you know?
Yes.
Were you ever doing that before, you know, before this all happened? What's your background? Tell us.
So prior to April 15, 2013, I worked for a development company as the senior vice president of the residential portfolio. Basically, back in 2003, they were mainly construction and management in the retail and commercial genres industries. And in 2003, they decided to diversify into apartment communities. So they hired me on to start up their apartment community portfolio. So we started building and managing and owning apartments back in 2003. And I would oversee from the construction part to the process part to the operation part, where I would be involved with the architects in the beginning. And then I would set up the advertising, the brochures, the marketing, hiring, and then through operations, you know, making sure the lease up and all that happened. So
you did everything, essentially.
I did. Yes. And so that's really basically my background. Did I have to present a little bit here and there? Absolutely. You know, but nothing like to hundreds of people or at a time. You know, I've spoken at graduations where, you know, you have several hundred people to smaller groups where, you know, it's very intimate. And I enjoy each one just as much, because
for sure.
If I have one person come up to me at the end of my speech and say, you know what, you've helped me, you've made me think differently or look at things differently or consider, you know, it means that I'm doing the thing that I'm supposed to be doing. And every time I've done it so far, I've had one person reach out to me either at the event or after the event and say that to me. And if I can do that on a regular basis, I'm doing, I think, what I'm supposed to be doing in the world. Because
for sure.
We all live life day to day,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, you get up, you go to work, you do your thing, you go to bed, you get up, you go to work, you do your thing, you get up, you go, you know, it's very
true.
Repetitive.
It's so true.
You know? And for me, and I think for anybody, it would take an instance like this for you to take a step back and go, okay, what is life really about? it is about living. It is about working. It is about making money to a sense and to a degree. And it's about, I think more so though, trying to enjoy it. And I think we don't do that enough as Americans and as humans. And I think we need to really take a step back sometimes. And that's doing this public speaking and doing the book signings for Perfect Strangers. It allows me to really kind of take that life back that I had been gotten myself into such a routine that, you know, I always wanted to take Italian lessons, but life was always too busy. Never had the time,
right.
You know, blah, blah, blah. And now, not that I can speak it by any means, but I'm fitting Italian lessons into my life.
I love it.
It, you know, it made me really take a step back and say, okay, what are you going to do? What are you going to do now? Mm-hmm. What can you do that you didn't do before that you want to do? What did you do before that you can't do? And it's allowed me to really figure all of that stuff out again.
Right. And I think you're making such a good point too. It's like we control our lives, right? So like,
yep.
Just change your mindset. Make different things
easy.
Priorities. And totally not. Totally not. But I'm just
not
like,
easy.
You're just bringing up such a good point.
Yes. And I guess I would say with quotations around it, it was mm-hmm. easy for me because I was put in that position. Whereas if I wasn't put in that position, I'm sure I would be doing the same thing that I was doing 6 years ago.
Right.
You know, I'd be in my same routine as I was 6 years ago.
Right. Isn't that interesting? So what do you think, like when you first did your public speaking, like where was that, by the way? Where was the first place you ever public spoke about this? And what was that experience like for you?
So aside from doing interviews that I did when I was at Spalding,
mm-hmm.
the first one that I kind of did outside my safe walls of Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital was, I think I did two of them. The first one I did was at my sister's school where she's a teacher in New Hampshire, and it was small. It was kind of their kickoff to the school season.
Mm-hmm.
And she introduced me and I like cried through the whole entire thing.
Of course.
I just felt bad and it was awful. And my sister, when she was introducing me, started crying. And if I see anybody else crying, I start to cry. It's, you know,
it was still so fresh though, you know, like that's totally
very
makes
much
sense.
So.
Yeah.
Very much so. And the next one I did later that year was I spoke at Draycott High School's graduation. So I grew up in Draycott, Mass., but I didn't go to the high school. I went to a private high school. Coincidentally, my parents thought that I was going to take the wrong turn in life and become a troubled child. But I have to admit, I'm probably one of the best kids that any parent would ever want. Just saying. From my knowledge of my,
I love it. Own it. Own it. I love it. Yeah.
But one of the teachers that I had in elementary school in Draycott was on the school committee board, and he had suggested that I speak at their graduation, and had asked me to do so, and I was very much so honored. And you know, it was extremely emotional. I had never spoken in front of a group that large. And the thing that was even more touching with it is that so many of the people that I grew up with in Draycott, their kids were graduating. So there were so many people that I had gone to school with over the years that were in the audience that had kids there that were graduating. And I got to speak to those kids. And I hope that, you know, I was able to touch those children and let them know that, you know, life can change in an instant.
Right.
If someone had asked me when I was graduating from high school where I pictured myself this far out in life, this is not where I thought I would be.
Right.
By any means, you know? So, you know, it's those things that make me think that I'm doing the right thing to be able to speak to people, let them know how quickly life changes. And it can happen. It could have happened to any one of us.
Right. But I think your whole story and your scenario really shows that something positive can always come out of something negative.
I agree. And mm-hmm. that's really important for me to share that.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're doing it. You're totally doing it. So
thank you.
Oh my God. So fun. So before we play game time, please tell us where everybody can get your book and where you're speaking next.
Sure. So my book is available. Actually, if they go to my website, which is robostrong.com, R-O, and then B-O for Boston, strong.com. And you will find links there to Amazon, Indie, and Barnes & Noble. So that's where they can get the book. And my next speaking engagement is for the Massachusetts Association of Nutrition and Dietitians, which will be held this Friday at their annual conference.
Love it.
So, yeah. And then in April, I'm speaking along with Heather Abbott, one of the other survivors, who started her own foundation called the Heather Abbott Foundation. She gives out cosmetic prosthesis to people who, you know, can't get them, which, because not everybody can get a prosthetic and health insurance doesn't pay for all of them, especially the specialized type of legs.
Never knew and that. Everybody yeah. learns something new every day. That's very interesting. Yeah. Seriously.
So even if you want a running leg, health insurance generally will not cover that.
Right.
Because it's not a necessity in their eyes, which they should really revamp that, because anything that's going to keep someone healthy and get them exercising really is a necessity in life,
for
as
sure.
far as I'm concerned. But so she and I are speaking at this expo that's coming to town called Bespoke. And what they do is it's this exhibition in regards to prosthesis, kind of talking about the history and how they're evolved. And she and I are speaking at the opening night, which is Thursday, April 11th at the Prudential.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm really looking forward to that too. And that's really kind of kicking off the whole marathon anniversary.
Right. Cause it's that weekend, right? Crazy.
Yep. It's, and this year, the first time in the last 6 years of it being Monday, April 15th, which is the same date and day of what happened 6 years ago. So it's a little eerie with all
right.
that falling into place. So.
For sure. No, but I mean, like, if you guys can embrace it and keep sharing, like, the way that you really are making such a positive impact on so many people. So it's awesome.
Thank you.
No problem. All right, cool. So I want to play some game time, Roseanne. You can answer this however you want. There's no obligation.
Sure.
Just a fun way for all of us to get to know you. So
absolutely.
What is your TV guilty pleasure?
So I have one that I don't mind admitting. I don't watch a lot of TV, or I watch a lot more now because I've gotten definitely a little bit more lazy. But my first guilty one is that I love The Amazing Race. I'm not into all the other reality TV shows, but I do love The Amazing Race.
I've heard really good things about that. I personally have not seen it, but I've heard really good stuff about that show.
I feel like it's probably the one that's most real.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as though that it's based on choices, which I think that I've come to realize life is all about.
Right.
And then the second one that I really don't like to admit, and probably more so in its revamp, is the Jersey Shore.
Oh, I love Did you see, by the way, that Vinny and Pauly D are doing a Bachelor show now?
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait for that. Can't freaking wait for that.
I love those two, especially together. They're
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That makes me so happy. That made me laugh. I love it. Okay. What is Roseanne's favorite food?
So, gosh. You know, when I read through these questions or like just a few minutes ago before we came on, and I was thinking, how am I going to pick? I mean.
Okay. So give us like your top three choices.
Okay. Top three. I love Mexican food.
Love Mexican food.
Love it. I swear to God, I think I was Mexican in another life. And I love pizza and Italian food and pasta. So I would say those are my three.
Top three go-to. So for Mexican, are you like a fajita girl? Like, what's your go-to Mexican choice?
I love chile verde. So some nice pork in a green like salsa verde sauce. Really kind of my favorite, with refried beans.
Sounds really yummy. I'm a super Mexican fanatic myself. I love guacamole. That's like my guilty pleasure too.
I agree.
Yeah, so good.
Really good.
You're making me hungry about this. Exactly. Okay, next question. What is something that Roseanne has to do in her daily routine?
My daily routine always starts and ends with brushing my teeth and washing my face.
Okay, so that's pretty standard. But if we had to pick something else that you do in your regular day, what would it be that would stand out and be unique to us, you think?
Stand out and be unique. Well, I think it would be unique that I put my leg on first thing when I get out of bed.
True, true. Can you actually, what is that even like? I'm so fascinated.
So it doesn't take long. It's more of just a pain in the neck.
Right.
So, you know, very rarely do I ever do it, but some mornings I like lay in bed going, oh God, I don't want to put that thing on. Just because it's just a process.
An extra thing you have to do. Right, totally.
Exactly. So there's a liner, there's a silicone liner that goes over my residual limb, and it has a rubber ring down towards the end of my limb that when you slide it into this carbon fiber, what they call a socket, it creates kind of like a suction valve vacuum, and there's a little release button on the outside of the socket that I press to let the air out to get my limb in nice and snug, and so it's my leg is secured on by suction.
Crazy. So, I'm so fascinated. Yeah. I'm so fascinated. And it also allows you to like be able to move it clearly, right? Like you can bend it and whatever you need to do, especially if you're running and stuff, right?
Yes.
Or walking.
Yes. Although my regular walking leg isn't really geared towards running. They say you can run in it, but it's more like to run out of the way of an oncoming car.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's not made for like running miles technically, but, you know, it allows me to use my two hands. Otherwise, I'm on crutches because I don't have a wheelchair. And sometimes I think, oh, I should probably have something that I can scoot around on. You know, for days, like I was starting to have a skin irritation on that residual limb. And basically, if you have some sort of skin irritation, you really shouldn't wear your prosthesis because it doesn't breathe and it won't heal.
Right.
But because I kind of took the right precautions initially, it's healed fine. But those days, I'm on crutches if I can't put my leg on.
Right.
Because I don't have a wheelchair. So I don't know. I've fought it this long, and I'm just going to keep fighting until I guess it's 100% a necessity.
Right. And you obviously have strong arms. I mean, being on crutches all the time, you got to have some good muscles, right?
Yeah. You know, they were stronger. They were much stronger before, but, you know.
Yeah. No, but still, I mean, I'm just making a statement because it's true, yes, you know?
We work it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I was always really fascinated how that worked.
You're welcome.
If you could wear the same outfit for the rest of your life, pick one outfit that you would wear.
Absolutely. This one is easy, I think, for really almost any amputee, or at least the ones I know, but yoga pants.
Love yoga pants.
Yeah. You know, they're just the easiest thing to fit over the prosthesis.
Right.
You know, they kind of hold everything in. I don't know. They're just the most comfortable thing when you're wearing a prosthesis.
For sure. And do you have like a favorite top that you like to wear?
No, just like a comfortable like
T-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm into sweats, so I can totally attest to the sweatshirt.
Yeah, just something comfortable because, you know, it's just with it being such a pain in the neck, you just want something that's easy.
For sure.
You don't want to be fully uncomfortable, which you can be when you're dressed up and all that. But the other thing, though, in wearing a skirt or a dress or shorts with my prosthetic is if I ever have to make adjustments with my leg, it's easier in those types of things because of the fact that
they're free flowing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're easy to, you know, take on or take off. So.
Right. No, this is like you're filling us in with such inspiring facts, Roseanne. I love it. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Who as a motivational speaker do you look up to or admire and why?
So, you know, I like this question a lot too. And, the one that I've really kind of started to listen to a lot lately is Mel Robbins. In listening to her, she kind of has this one called the 5-second rule. And she makes it sound so simple in a way, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself where I don't have a routine life anymore, that my days might start later than usual and I'm not getting as much accomplished or I'm putting things off or I don't go, say, talk to someone that I want to talk to someone. And you know, if you count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and just act on it, you don't allow your brain to talk you out of it. And prior to April 15, 2013, I would get up in the morning and go to the gym. I would pack my gym bag the night before, get up, roll out of bed, grab my gym bag and just go because I didn't allow my brain to talk me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then since April 15, 2013, I've gotten out of my routine. I've gotten out of all of that. And I've let my brain talk me out of a lot of different things. So in hearing about her and hearing about her 5-second rule, I have listened to her audio tapes on quite a few occasions. And they have really kind of made me think about it when I go to do things in the morning. And they do help change your life. And it's so simple. And I think that like when I speak to groups, I tell them what I'm talking about is really not rocket science. I mean, life is all about choices, as if we didn't know that, right. You know, and it's better to stay positive than to be negative, as if we didn't know that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's these things with people telling you or reminding you or kind of embedding it a little bit more in your brain where you can relate it personally makes a huge change. And I feel like that is something that I really, you know, needed. And she's really come into my life via her audio tapes in such a good way.
I'm going to totally try that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Like, you should listen to it.
Yeah.
It's called the 5-second rule. And, you know, it's really not that hard. You know, it is, but it isn't.
Right.
And as long as you have that in the back of your brain, then, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And you don't count up. You don't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Exactly.
You can keep counting. You can go 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, infinity. So if you do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you kind of have to stop at one and just go.
Right. No, it's so true. I'm totally going to try that. I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
So Roseanne, it was such a pleasure to have you today. Can you please tell us, again, how everybody can follow you on social media? And
sure.
That would be amazing.
Sure. I'm, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And, the call is, at Robo Strong Stoya, so R-O, which is for Roseanne, B-O for Boston, Strong, and then my last name, S as in Sam, D as in David, O-I-A, or just on my website, which is robostrong.com.
I love it. I'm so glad you broke down, by the way, what Robo Strong meant, because I was totally going to ask that question too. So thank you for breaking it down for us. Well, thank you so much for coming. It was such a pleasure to have you on our show.
Same here, Jackie, and I look forward to doing a Zoom one with you.
Same. We're totally going to do video next time. So thank you, everybody,
absolutely,
so much for tuning in to Next on Scene, and stay tuned for who's next on scene.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Next on Scene with your host, Jackie Zuck. Showcasing tomorrow's scene today, for startups to celebrities, we are your source to find out what's next. Are you next? We want to hear from you. Get in touch with us today at nextonscene.com or get social with us at Next on Scene on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And are you next? We want to hear from you. Stay tuned for who's next on scene.